Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is the 43rd and current mayor of Miami. Francis Suarez first got on my radar when someone tweeted out, "What if we move Silicon Valley to Miami?" And Francis quote tweeted this and said, "How can I help?" And it's that spirit that he's then taken after that tweet went viral, had over 5,000 likes on Twitter. And he's built Miami into a place where people want to go. And he's a beacon of light and optimism in a political scene that sometimes just feels downright depressing. And so it was really cool to talk to him. It was a great opportunity to connect with someone who is using the internet for good. And I really enjoyed this 30-minute conversation. If you do as well, or you have any thoughts about this episode, let me know on Twitter, at @HeyDannyMiranda. And without further ado, this is my episode with Francis Suarez.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
So, first of all, Mayor, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for having me.
I'd love to start with a text exchange you had with a David B. What happened when a David B texted you? And I'd love for you to tell the story here.
You know, it's funny because it feels like it was so long ago. And, you know, and all of a sudden I'm driving and I get this text message from somebody saying, like, "You're doing a great job. Thank you so much." And I said, "Look, I'm really sorry. I don't have your number saved." And then he writes, "David B." And I said, "That you're not helping. You know what I mean? I need the last name." I know a lot of David B's. And then he writes Beckham. So yeah, that was just a funny exchange, you know. It just sort of really highlights. So it's a funny question because it's really the one that highlights sort of the surreality of everything that's happened since December 4th. It's been almost like a surreal thing. And if you would have told me on December 3rd, "Hey, tomorrow you're going to put out a tweet and all these things are going to happen," I would have said, there's no way you could come up with a movie. Not Hollywood couldn't come up with anything that fantastical.
Yeah. And so over the past 6 months, you've met with Jack Dorsey, David Beckham, Elon Musk, the Winklevoss twins, Kevin O'Leary, Nikki Haley, Dave Portnoy. What commonalities do you see in so many high-level people?
Well, the commonality is that they're excited about what's happening in Miami. The commonality is that they are excited about a young elected official, mayor, that is creating an agenda for progress and growth in a city that benefits not just my generation, but it's going to benefit many generations come. Your generation, you know, your unborn children. I don't know if you have children, but I'm assuming you don't. Your unborn children, my unborn grandchildren. And this is a generational moment and opportunity. And I think they all see it. And they want to be a part of it. And I want them to be a part of it as well. I think it's what makes it special.
Yeah, something I've noticed in everything you talk about is a long-term approach. Where did your long-term approach begin and why do you have such a long-term approach?
I think part of it is because I was born here in Miami. I'm the first mayor of Miami in the entire 125-year history. I was actually born here. So, and I've never considered living anywhere else. So I think when you're born here, when your dad was a mayor, so I'm the first father and son mayor as well, you start thinking of your city in a more longer term view. You think, I'm going to be here this whole time. You know, I'm not just going to be the mayor. I'm going to be the mayor. And then when I leave, I'm going to be here as a private citizen or, you know, whatever happens in my future. But I intend to live in Miami my whole life. I intend to be here until my last day. So for me, when I think of the responsibility and the time that you have to be mayor, because it's a finite amount of time, just like you have a finite amount of time to be a councilman and pretty much any elected official position of an executive, you think about what are the things that you can do to leave the city in a better place than you found it. And, you know, I focus tremendously now on creating high paying jobs in our community because that has an enormous ripple effect. It not only affects the person who has the job, it affects their spouse. It affects your children, their children's educational opportunities, and it affects their grandchildren, because their children will ultimately grow up more educated with better prospects. So it affects generations and generations. And that's what's gotten me very excited about this Miami moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it all started with the tweet, how can I help? And I was so curious because of how it took the world by storm is like, what do you actually do to help? What are the practical things you're doing when someone DMs you that's a high profile person? What are you saying to them? Like, here's the best place to live. Like, yeah. Break that down for me.
So everything, I mean, we created what I call the back end, which is Venture Miami, which takes every single person that DMs me and calls me and tries to create a roadmap for their success. So anything from where should I live to where should my kids go to school to where should my business be located to what kind of incentives are out there to help be successful to can you help me get my driver's license? I mean, we do everything. We think of ourselves as a concierge service. And I think it's a big contrast to what you see happening in other cities. In other cities, you see people pushing out the creators, the innovators, the people who have capital. And we are inviting them here. And frankly, I was talking to somebody last night, this really great company, and I couldn't understand why, cities were doing that. And I also couldn't understand why no other cities seem to be doing what I'm doing now, which is really great to be a monopoly in a sense, sort of have this clear runway without competition to be able to attract people to your city. It's incredible.
Why do you think that more mayors aren't doing what you're doing?
I think it has to do with a lot of reasons. I think, first of all, there's a philosophical problem. I think, a lot of cities are run by people who believe that government is the answer. I don't. I don't think government's the answer. I think government has is to exist for a limited purpose, to do things that that are within its core competency. And then aside from that, it's to facilitate the private sector, and it's to inspire and motivate people to do things that are more socially conscious. So that's sort of my concept of government. So I think there's a big divide there. And I think that's what's creating a lot of the issues, I think the second part is my age. You know, I think being a relatively young mayor, I'm 43, I was 40 when I was elected, being a relatively young mayor of a big city, it's unusual. You don't see that a lot. If you can go around America and look at big cities, they're not really being run by a young 40-year-old. You know, they're being run by people significantly older. So when you look at where the world is going and where are the economic opportunities, you have to be at a certain part of your life to really be able to capture it. Like, it's hard for some people to understand crypto. It's hard for some people to understand NFTs. It's not for me. For me, it's really straightforward. And it's not going to be for you, and it's not going to be for the prior generations that come before you, because you're growing up with it. So for you, it's like second nature. Just like now, these phones are second nature. I have my 3-year-old who knows how to scroll, use my phone. So it's incredible.
Yeah, speaking on that, I was curious what your take is on giving children technology, because you're a parent of young children. And I'm curious, like, would you give your children an iPhone? What age would you recommend that as a new parent?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough choice. Let's put it this way. Let's start with this. I believe, and this is part of the reason why I'm doing this, that technology, whether we like it or not, regardless of our party, it's here with us to stay. And it's only going to become a greater and greater part of our life. That's, to me, it's just a fact. It's indisputable. It's not even worth arguing about. So if that's the fact, then what do you have to do as a society? You have to embrace it. Now, as a parent, you have to, first of all, help children develop their social skills. I do think that one of the problems with technology is you have a tendency to recede into the technology and at the cost of potentially developing your social skills. And I think it's important in the world that we live in, even though we're in a virtual world right now, to still develop your social skills. I think that's incredibly important. I think it's also important for family bonding time. Like, one of the biggest issues is, and I'm a culprit of it, I get home and the first thing, I'm answering text messages, I'm answering DMs, I'm answering all this stuff, and my kids want to play with me. So, life is about, as you get older, you'll see, I think life is about prioritizing. It's about, focusing when you're doing one particular task, and then being able to let it go, or let that particular part of your life go for a second, move on to the other task. And I think it's a challenge, by the way. I make it sound easy. It's not easy. It's very challenging. And it takes a lifetime, I think, to learn. It's taken me a lifetime to get better at it. And it's something that I work on every day.
And every day you get more and more distractions coming at you.
Absolutely.
Before, you mentioned how you're acting as a concierge service. And I know your wife works in hospitality. How much of that has your wife work in hospitality has impacted you treating Miami as a concierge service as the mayor?
I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you a lot. I mean, you know, she worked at the highest end hotels here in the Biltmore, the Four Seasons. And just the way that she, you know, the way that she is, the way that she functions, the way she is as a professional, her level of professionalism, the standard of care, right, with which she deals with her customers, what they expect too, because when you're in a high-end hotel, that the expectation is extremely high as well, right? We joke about that sometimes. But if you take that model and you implement that with every employee in a government sector, to every customer, with every one of your residents, then what you get is an incredible product, right? You get residents that feel like they're cared for instead of being pushed away. You get residents that feel like, you know, you're going to help them rather than tell them no. It's so easy to say no. You know, I work with a lawyer, my first lawyer that I worked for, and he always used to tell me, Francis, you know, like that, Francis, you never say no to your clients. You always say yes, but. Hey, can I do this? Yes, but you're going to go to jail if you do it. You can do it, but you're going to go to jail. So, you know, it's a yes, but as opposed to no. I mean, and it's, I know it's a tiny refinement, but it's important because it changes the way that you approach things.
I like that. So one thing I noticed from talking to you briefly and researching is that you're a really positive, optimistic guy. And I was curious, where exactly do you think that comes from?
I know exactly where it comes from. It comes from my dad. My dad is the ninth of 14 kids, came to this country with nothing, got a full scholarship to high school where he studied and learned how to speak English. He was 12 years old, didn't know how to speak English. At 17, took the SAT, got almost a perfect score, got a full scholarship to Villanova University, studying mechanical engineering, and then got two graduate degrees from Harvard. He speaks four or five languages, and he's written like 9 books. So my dad is the kind of guy who always. I mean, I can show you text messages. The last text message he sent me, he came over to my house. This is amazing. Comes over to my house on, I think it was Saturday, for an hour, just to hang out for an hour. And I'm trying to find the text message here. He's with me for an hour. And in an hour, he says, that was the best hour and 15 minutes of my life.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I learned that in life we have a choice, and I'll tell you, it's a choice because I used to not be that way. It wasn't my default, right? My default was to be negative and pessimistic. And I remember one day, I'll never forget it. And I said this in an interview the other day, actually he heard it and he started kind of getting emotional about it. And he's not an emotional guy, by the way. But I was about 18 years old. And I remember one day coming to him and saying, Dad, you know, my life is terrible. You know, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. And I remember him saying, what are you talking about? You have the most amazing life. You got this, you got this, you got this. And by the way, everything he said was true. It wasn't false. But I realized in that moment, wait a second, I'm looking at life like this and he's looking at the same life like this. So why look at it like this? Why not look at it like this? It just makes more sense and I'm going to be happy, right? And so you realize that it is literally a choice. And I know it sounds, again, overly simplistic, but we've got to reprogram ourselves sometimes to be that way. And you realize that positivity feeds positivity. And part of the reason why I did what I did on Twitter when I've done it is because I feel like I found what I call a portal of positivity in Twitter. It's a very small portal because Twitter has a tendency to be very negative. And I wanted to run a truck through it. And I went from 32,000 followers, I think on December 3rd, I just crossed 100,000 today on Twitter. So I think it's just it's a wonderful statement about people who want to do and who want to build. They have to be positive. You can't wake up in the morning and think, this is not going to work out. I'm going to fail. If you do that, you're not going to get anywhere.
You mentioned your father being such an incredible man, so many accomplishments, an optimistic guy, a smart individual, and the former mayor of Miami. How was that difficult? Was it feeling like living in his shadow almost? Because when you have someone like LeBron James, I always think about LeBron James's children, you know, and it sounds like your dad was the LeBron James of Miami.
He was, and it was incredibly difficult. He was probably the Michael Jordan because that was his era, the Michael Jordan of Miami. But yeah, no, it was difficult. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it wasn't. My dad was elected mayor. I was 8 years old. When he left, I was 16. So it was 8 years. It was eight very, very formative years in my life. And it was very difficult. I mean, my dad was a, you know, had two graduate degrees from Harvard. You know what I mean? Was the first Cuban mayor of Miami. You know, he was 36 years old when he was mayor. I'm actually 40 when I became mayor. So we laugh about it. And I tell him, you know, dad, you know, you were a little younger than I was. The difference is you look 40 and I look 36. So, but he was, and he was on top of the world. You know, he was a guy that walked on water, but he, you know, I've been very blessed. I've been blessed because I have his support. I have my wife's support, my family. You know, my sisters are all married. You know, I have three sisters who are all married with children. My wife, my in-laws are married. My wife and her siblings are all married. You know, so I thank God, and I knock on wood, we have a drama-free life. And I think that's incredibly helpful and probably undervalued in terms of my success. You know, I have to give my mom a lot of credit too, because while my dad is sort of the intellectual, and I get my intellect from him, my mom is the personality person. And I think that's what helps me identify with people, socialize better, dance better. And, and my dad, you know, I've used my dad's example to push myself. So, you know, I'm going to be, God willing, if I'm reelected in November or January, I'm going to be president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I'm going to be president of all the mayors nationally. You know, Time Magazine designated me as one of the next 100 leaders. And then Fortune this week said I was one of the top 20 leaders in the world. So, I mean, it makes him excited. It makes him proud. While it may have been difficult when I was a kid, it's now become fuel, you know, and it's a positive fuel. But it wasn't easy. And some people don't make it out of that shadow.
For the Time piece you mentioned, Marco Rubio wrote, while his efforts, referring to you, while his efforts to solve the big problems are clear, I personally witnessed his commitment to solving problems that fly under the radar when we visited public housing complexes together in Miami's Liberty City neighborhood. What was that experience working with Marco Rubio directly like?
It was great. I mean, Marco's been a dear friend for a long time. It was beautiful what he wrote in Time. That particular project was a project where a tremendous amount of our homicides in the city came from that project. And we worked with Miami-Dade County and with a developer to redevelop the entire project, and we transformed the neighborhood completely. But you know, we often think of our politicians that they're defined by the big things. You know, so I love what he said, because we're defined by the big things that we build, whether we do a stadium deal, whether we do, you know, X, Y, or Z, whatever the big deals are. And the truth is, it's being a successful public servant is much more about what you do between the lines. You know what I mean? It's much more about it. I'll give you an example. We put up, and whenever you come to our office, you'll see it. We put up a wall, one for my commission office days and one for my mayor office days. And I called it the "he doesn't do anything" wall. That's what I called it. That was the name. Because people will often say, oh, you know, if he hasn't done anything major, he doesn't do anything. You know, these politicians don't do anything. So what I did was I put up a board, right, which was a board where you can put thumbtacks into it. And I said, every time we get a letter from a constituent thanking us for doing something for them, I want you to put the letter up on the board. And eventually it will become, there'll be so many that they'll start falling because there's so many. And we have one for my commission office, one for my mayor's office. And every time we put those letters up on that wall, and it's just a reminder of what our job is. Our job at the very core fundamentally is to say yes, is to help people. You know, at the very, in all their problems, no matter what they are, no matter whether they deal with the city or not. Because if they don't deal with the city, then we should get them to somebody who can help them that deals with whatever organization or entity or government that can help them.
One thing that I noticed when I was looking through the last presidential election was feeling like I wasn't represented by either party and either person. And I think a lot of Americans are feeling that same way. But when I went through your Twitter account and when I went through you as a person, I said, man, this guy represents to me the American spirit. I wish he was running for president. I wish I could vote for him on a national level. So it leads me to ask, do you have any interest in moving beyond the city of Miami? I know that's, you have right now your reelection coming up and that's the number one priority. But in the future, 2024, 2028 and beyond, is that a possibility?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I never got into politics, first of all, thinking that I'd be in politics my whole life, number one. I never got into politics really thinking that much about the next job. But I have always prepared myself for the next possible job, right? For example, when I ran in 2013 for mayor and got out of the race, I kept the money in my political committee and I built it up so that when I ran in 2017, it was a much easier run and I won by 86%. So I've always prepared myself for the possibility. And, you know, if God willing, I don't have an opponent this year, then I'll prepare myself for the possibility of potentially maybe running for governor one day, or maybe getting on a vice presidential ticket as has been discussed over the last few weeks, or who knows? I mean, what they call direct shot on goal, you know, running directly for president. Look, I think what you're saying is very powerful. You're saying that, and I hear a lot of people saying this, what is appealing to people is elected officials who speak clearly on the issues, who understand people and listen to people, who don't care about solving problems through a partisan prism, right? It's not like, okay, I'm gonna solve flooding or sea level rise or homelessness or immigration, but I gotta first do it the Republican way or the Democrat way or whatever. It's not about that. You know, problems, and what's beautiful is residents don't care. They don't care at the end of the day what party solved them. They just want the problem solved. And what's happening is because we're antagonistic, you know, we're not solving problems because it's about my side versus your side. And I think that is just creating a tremendous issue. And it'll be interesting to see how that evolves. I think the other second piece of it is a generational thing. I think the fact that, you know, part of the disconnection in the last presidential race was that neither of the two candidates represented our generation, right? So there's a little bit of a disconnect. Would they know about crypto? Would they know about, you know, NFTs? Would they know about, you know, how much we care about the planet and making sure that the planet is here for, you know, and using our environment and our economy shouldn't be antagonistic. They should be holistic, right? So I think you'll see in the next generation, hopefully, elected officials that can inspire people and that can really motivate people, because that's another thing that they think is missing. It's not like you go out there and go, man, that guy's so inspiring. I want to run through a wall for that person. And that's just not happening. And I think part of it is we're not getting the best options oftentimes when we run, when people run for office.
Absolutely. And so going back to you, I'm curious, what behavioral modification or habit change in the past 6 months are you most proud of?
You know, I think for me, it's been the discipline to understand the gravity of this moment and to seize it. And that meant in December, for example, that I tweeted 800 times. If you look at the metrics in my Twitter account, I've never tweeted it. Even this month, I mean, I'm like at 150, 200 tweets. 800 is like an enormous amount of tweets. And I got 27 million impressions. This month, I've gotten 14 million impressions in the last 28 days. It's a lot. But I think for me, what I was most proud of is realizing, hey, we're onto something really big. And this might mean that I don't get to sleep as much, or I don't get to, you know, have some of the other comforts that I want. But this may never happen again. And so I've got to really go all in. And I think that's why you see me working so hard, because I realize that not only that every single job that we help create, like I said before, it doesn't just affect that person. It affects their family. It affects their children. It affects their own. So it's a generational impact. And I never really quite saw it that way until now. Now is when it became very evident to me.
It seems like you're working with a mission that's even bigger than yourself, which makes it even more powerful.
Absolutely. And I don't know that I ever really understood that I would ever get this kind of attention and that I would ever have this kind of an opportunity. And so because I have it, I'm very thankful and very grateful to God for the opportunity. And I want to make the most of it and hope that I continue to get opportunities like this.
One thing that you're using with the opportunity is to create content and create interview series where you featured people like David Beckham, Josh Richards, Kevin O'Leary, and you've published a bunch of these. I'm curious, what do you think makes a good interview?
Well, I've done over 100.
Wow.
And I think what makes a good interview is a few things. I think one of them is understanding that person you're interviewing, right? Like knowing them. I think it's understanding what your audience wants to know about them, right? What I like about this, and podcasts also allow for this, it's more of a long form, right? It's not like usually interviews are 3 minutes, 30 seconds. You know, what you see on TV is usually very, very short form. So I think you have a lot more time to dive into things, right? And then I've also been very blessed because I have friends that I mean, look at the range of people that you're talking about, you know, from a Dave Portnoy, you know, to a Kevin O'Leary, to Josh Richards, you know what I mean? I mean, you're talking about a spectrum of people that are young, older, business, you know, social media, et cetera. So it's been exciting. And frankly, I've had a lot of friends that tell me, listen, your Cafecito Tech Talks are better than anything that's on television right now. And so they're like, they want more. So it's fun. And, you know, I've had people like, I think I did three yesterday, and they were telling me, man, you're really good at this. Like, and I actually enjoy it. It's fun. And what happens is sometimes I get like really excited. Like sometimes I get like, we're doing an interview and we're doing something really great. You know what I mean? We did one yesterday that, and it actually posted it yesterday from General Catalyst. And they were announcing that they were coming and bringing a civic vertical, creating companies that have a civic mission, right? And I got so excited. It's a $10 billion of assets under management company. It was a massive company. We never would have had that opportunity in Miami before, never. And so that's, I get pumped up and I get really into it because I realize how exciting this is. And I feel like people are you know, capturing that energy.
What other moments get you really excited when you're just on the job?
You know, I'm very blessed because my days are very different, but they're very fun and they're very exciting. And this particular last 6 months, even more so. So I'm traveling sometimes and I'm doing enjoyable things. I'm meeting the most amazing people in the world. And that to me is exciting because you learn from them tremendously and you build relationships that you can go back to and do great things with, whether it's, you know, philanthropy or whether it's fundraising or whatever it is that I'm doing. And I've just been very blessed to have some great experiences. And so that for me has been the most enjoyable part of it.
A lot of people go to you, the mayor, for advice. Where do you go for advice?
Well, I go to a lot of places, believe it or not. My wife, obviously, is one of the people that I go to for advice. My father is someone that I go to a lot for advice. My sisters, I go to for advice. I you know, obviously my mom. But so my family, I would say put that in a bucket. And then I have like, you know, in terms of all this, you know, I have some, you know, friends that I trust that are, you know, friends from before I was in politics, plus friends that are in, you know, tech and in that tech community that understand the community. And I remember, for example, in that December when I was tweeting all the time, at one point I was in a chat group and I asked the group of guys that were in the group and the women, you know, I said, guys, you think it's too much? I feel like there's a part of me that's telling me that it's too much. It's too in your face. And they're like, no, keep going, keep going, keep going. So sometimes you have to get outside of yourself because we're biased, right? And we bring a bunch of biases to the, so you need people that first of all are experts. And second of all, are a little bit distant from the outside that can tell you one way or the other, whether you're on the right track or not.
Was it imposter syndrome you were feeling? Like there's no other politician doing something like this. What was it that was holding you back thinking that it was too much?
I think it was two things. I think it was one, it's very, and I know it's going to sound a little hokey pokey, but you're putting yourself out there. You're very vulnerable. Right. Because you're in today's world, everything you do is recorded. Right. So once you put it out there, very hard to take back. So you don't want to make a mistake. And the second part is you don't want to be annoying in life. There's a delicate balance between persistence and annoying. Right. It's very delicate in fundraising. You have to understand that line. You want to be persistent, but you don't want to be annoying. And so I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't on the wrong side of that line.
How do you find that line?
You know, I think you do it a lot by feel. I'm very, again, blessed. This is my mom's side. You know, people will say my dad has a very high IQ. My mom has a very high EQ. And I think you have to know yourself. You have to know how you're perceived. You have to listen. You have to take advice. And you have to, like, you know, like, for example, on social media, when you're doing something, there's comments that fall into the hateration box, right? People that no matter what you do, they're gonna say something bad about you. And then there's comments that are people that are thoughtfully critical of you, and you should not dispel that or ignore that. You can't just go around. I mean, I'm a positive person, but I can't just go around thinking I never make a mistake. I can't go around thinking, oh, this person's, you know, everything I do is right and everything that they're saying is wrong. No, I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. So I think you have to, you can be positive, but you can also listen and be reflective and have a good sense of, hey, maybe I should do this a little differently.
Mayor, you spend a lot of time on podcasts. You spend a lot of time talking about issues that are important to you. I'm curious, what's something that you wish you could spend a little more time on?
I wish I could spend more time with my family, number one. I wish I could spend more time thinking about the future versus thinking about the present and executing it in the present. I've always, that's another thing that I'll tell you, Danny, it's a fine line and it's a tough thing when you're running a, you know, billion-dollar company with 4,500 employees and four labor unions, there's always a crisis every day, you know? So, and you're executing on things, right? You're getting things done, but oftentimes it's somebody else's agenda. When you can stop, hit the pause button and spend half an hour focusing on your agenda, like, hey, what do I want to accomplish? What are my goals? That's usually when the best ideas come. So I think there's just a tendency in life to focus on what's in front of you instead of what's ahead of you. And I think for me, I wish I could spend a little more time focusing on what's in front of me, like what's in the future.
Yeah. Speaking on that, where do you find time to reflect and take a step back?
Well, every day I try to pray. I have like a set of prayers that I go through and I try to meditate a little bit on what my day is going to be like, what I want to focus on, what I want to accomplish. So that's part of it. I'm now trying to take some vacations. I've never been good at taking vacations because I'm a workaholic, but I do understand the need. And by the way, it's funny because in December when I was in Bahamas last December and I was tweeting the entire time, you know? So it's hard to get away too, because you can't escape this, you know? I mean, anywhere in the world, basically. So, you know, escaping it and vacations are more mindset than anything else. I think the discipline of the mind is probably one of the most important qualities that we can learn as we grow.
And you practice CrossFit as well. So that is a way you,
7 days a
you
week.
Bring that fitness to the table.
7 days a week.
Seven days a week.
Wow. I try to go.
What is?
Some days I miss depending on a variety of issues, but I my intent is to go 7 days a week because like you said, I mean, I think the stress relief, staying in shape, having that time where you're disconnected. I do it 3 times a week with my wife. So it's a great opportunity for her and I to connect. And so it's fun.
Mayor, this has been such an incredible conversation. Do you have any final pieces of parting wisdom for people just trying to pursue the highest version of themselves?
I think that's what it's about. I love that you ended that way. I think life is about trying to always extract the best version of yourself every single day. Number one. Number two, nobody's figured out how to live yesterday again. So once yesterday's gone, it's gone. All you can do is focus on today and tomorrow. There's really not a good use. I mean, you can look back to learn, but it's not looking back to brood and to get down about it. It doesn't do much for you. So thinking about tomorrow and today is probably the most important decision that you have to make. And I think you're a great interviewer. I love your questions. You're on the ball. You had a bunch of good stuff. So I can learn a lot from you on how to run a successful podcast.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. This has been an incredible conversation. Mayor, where can people find more from you if they want to?
So on Twitter, I think it's at Francis Suarez. On Instagram, it's at Miami Mayor. I think I also have a Twitter account that's at Miami Mayor. I think it's at Mayor of Miami on Instagram, and it's at Miami Mayor on Twitter. So I have two Twitter accounts and an Instagram account. And then we have LinkedIn, of course. We're doing some stuff with TikTok, but we'll see. I don't know.
Well, I'm a huge fan of all that, and we'll put it all below. Thank you so much, Mayor. Appreciate your time, and I'm extremely grateful for you.
It's in there.
Yes, sir.
You got it.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Francis Suarez. If you enjoyed this conversation or you have any feedback about it, let me know on Twitter at @HeyDannyMiranda. Thank you, as always, for listening. It means the world to me from the bottom of my heart. If this is the first episode you listen to or the 114th, it really means the world to me. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.